Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3. That's it. Episode 1 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2021. I'm joined here today by two infamous and well-known Rocket League shoutcasters within the esports scene, not David Blaine the Magician, but David Lane, also known as Yummy Cheeseman, and the man who knows everything, John McDonald, a.k.a. Johnny Boy. How are we both going today?
Going good, man. Yeah, going good. Sorry if there's a slight delay here. We are, of course, in the Australia to Scotland full, well, maximum distance almost. Hopefully we're not going to be too bothered by this. If you're wondering why I'm standing and looking this way, by the way, it's because I haven't moved my camera since I did standing casting for RLCS Championships. So this is where my monitor usually is. We don't look at that when we're on the camera. Just look at the camera. But now I have to look at the camera for the topics and to see you guys. So, or look at my screen. So that's why I'm standing like this. Sorry about that.
I just wanted to give Johnny the first reaction to the introduction. I already know Lockie because I hang out with him and some of the Renegades boys on the often. So no surprise the joke that he was going to make for me, but I am a bit of a magician, especially when it comes to Apex Legends, huh?
Oh, that's debatable. That is debatable at its best. I guess what we'll do is we'll kick it off with, I guess, a little bit of introduction about both yourselves, how you got into esports and how you ended up in Rocket League.
You want to go first?
Yeah,
David,
well,
magician.
Yeah. I'm just going to jump in because nobody cares about Johnny True. Boy. They've all seen his stream where he talks about it 100 times every day because he's famous and he has millions of people asking him that question. I got into Rocket League just right off the bat. I think Johnny Boy did as well. I think the most interesting story about my origins is that I was a player, and when I was a player, I went to Johnny Boy for coaching and paid the exorbitant fees he charged people to teach me how to play Rocket League. But he was very, very helpful, and we actually made a friendship from there, and he's taught me some stuff about casting, and we've talked a lot about casting since then. And, you know, when you can't be a successful player, I found out the best thing to do was become a somewhat moderately successful caster.
Exactly. I never even had the pro play to, you know, fall away from. So that I just ended up being a caster pretty much immediately. The short version of that story is, I was pretty good friends with Marky Duda and Scrubkiller, who were the best 1v1 players in the world at the time. This is way back in the beginning of Rocket League. And one day they were playing a private ones match. They were just playing 1v1 against each other, and I asked if I could watch it. I happened to be streaming, and my chat told me to cast it. So I did my version of that, and people actually liked it. I wasn't really casting. I was just talking about the game. But people really liked it because it was something different from what most of the casting was back then. So there was a lot of requests for more of that, and I just kept on doing it. So here we are now, about 5.5 years later, still casting 1v1 the wrong way, or just by talking about the game. It seems to work, so I'm just going with it.
Mm-hmm. The premier and only real, in my eyes, 1v1 caster in the world, even though 99% of that's just you casting stuff on your channel. Right?
Well, yeah, well, 1v1, I think it's got a bigger future than just me. I really hope it does. But it is true for the majority of the content out there. I've been somewhat involved, but there are other 1v1 things as well. I think, you know, Gold Rush have to get a shout out for their event that they did last year. Yeah, I know, Yummy, you've done stuff in the OCE scene as well. So it's not just me, but I guess I would be the first person people would think of because I've really been pushing it for a long, long time. I don't think that I'm the future of ones. I think it's going to grow way beyond my channel. I hope it does.
Hell yeah. And I mean, even just recently when I had apparently Jack on, he really gave you the shout outs to being a good ones caster as well. So there you go.
Now, that's a top honor. I really do appreciate that because Jack, if anybody's watched his YouTube videos, I'm going to give him the shout out as well. He's a very analytical guy. He's a very smart player, and he's very good at giving live commentary, which is a totally different ballgame when you can actually talk about what you're doing and what you're thinking while playing and still be the number one player in the ranked leaderboard. That's unbelievable. So you definitely got to check out his channel. I'm sure a lot of people have already. He's really popping off these days. But yeah, he's very, very smart player, very smart guy.
He's also usually really brutal with his feedback too. Yeah. So having any compliments from him is pretty good.
Strict and straight to the point, hey? Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. One kind of idea I wanted to jump into, and I guess this really falls within your domain, Johnny Boy, is this whole idea of running these community events, running these 1v1 events, and I guess stepping away from the main RLCS events and creating your own kind of dynamic events. Now, how important is this for the ecosystem of Rocket League, where I guess people within the scene are able to jump in and, you know, spectate Rocket League at a professional level, see the players in play outside of RLCS?
I do think it's very important. And, you know, that's how a lot of, current teams and players have made their come up, and even how a lot of casters have got their start. I mean, I didn't cast RLCS until halfway through season 9, I believe. So I was, you know, only really doing my own stuff before then. Well, actually, I guess the year before that, I was contracted by DreamHack as well to do some of their live events. But for all the years before that, I did a few events here and there, some in London. I did one in Sweden. But for the most part, I was just doing stuff on my channel. So whenever people ask how do you make a name for yourself in the content scene or the casting scene, that's how you do it. You just have to go out and make the content. If people like it, then great. If they don't, then well, I hope you had fun making it, because that's really the point anyway. Like, it's all about having fun. But yeah, as far as like the scene as a whole, it's a really I think important thing, especially at a time like this when there is an RLCS. And the same thing for last off season. There was a long off season, and there were so many community tournaments stepping up and filling that void. And last off season saw the introduction of custom overlays, which are now a part of RLCS X, and I'm sure that they wouldn't be had it not been introduced by community tournaments, because they've done so many trials, so many tests, so many different variations. So things like that can make a breakthrough, and then eventually appear on the big screen. Things like the players' face cams appearing on screen. We tested that with Smug before. I don't know if Psyonix were watching that and thinking, "Oh, hold on, that actually works pretty well." But it does add another thing to the broadcast. And if you look back at the start of RLCS Season X, the broadcast is nothing compared to what it is now. So, community tournaments can really help innovate and improve and refine the online broadcasts. And even as far as formats go, they can test new formats. And the one thing I would like to see more actually is just more game modes. I know, surprise, surprise, I'm the one saying that, but. I love that Jarby's putting out 2v2 content these days, and hopefully we're going to see maybe some more crew battle stuff come back, and just less of the same old 3v3 groups into double elimination. It seems like that's all people do, right? It's the same format, same game mode every time. It's good when these things can be tested and switched up.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's definitely important to have that kind of different outlook towards just approaching the same old stale content.
I think it's especially important for, I actually say, now with the current format of RLCS, the community side of tournaments and events is actually less important than it was really like an elite internal club at the very top in previous RLCSs, where you had to be within the top 8 or top 10 of a scene, and that really changed very much at all. It was very stagnant at that level. And so community and tournaments were so important for anybody outside of that top 10 to even maybe get a name for themselves, get a chance to play in an RLRS level team, like a second division level team, which is where your chance to get into a top level team. But it's still really important now, because there are still teams, kind of tier one teams, that are all going to be playing in RLCS. For the tier two teams, they may not get through, say, the qualifiers into the top 16 or whatever. Their chance to get on the stage is being in some of the smaller, $3,000 or less community tournaments, which is funny to think about, considering a large community tournament just a few years ago was $1,000 and everybody was playing in it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you play in those, and that's where you get the chance to be seen. That's where casters get a chance to be seen and grow as well. And they provide more of a middle step from, casting over replays.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. And I think if you look back towards, you know, even 2-3 years ago or even a year ago and compare that to now, how much a dynamic shift has it had in regards to, you know, upcoming community events and I guess the creation of own player-driven tournaments?
Well, I actually think that it's changed a lot with the change of leadership in Sonics. There's a new kind of esports team or new kind of tri-way esports leadership. And I felt like that team, especially under the Epic banner, has been really open to doing a lot of new stuff and like pushing the envelope and picking up ideas from, say, Smug or other tournaments that Johnny Boys run and get like the Live Now button in for that. Get what they did in the off season, the last one, a community event where they threw in like a couple of hundred grand of prize money around all communities around the around all regions to get stuff going, and that really bolstered at that community level, at that outside of RLCS level, and still gets to show off how awesome Rocket League can be.
That was really proactive as well from Psyonix. I know. I remember I was streaming the first day of closed qualifiers for Fusion, a tournament that I ran last year on my channel in collaboration with InCivic from Sandrock Gaming. And I was just live with the qualifier. Then I saw on Twitter that Corey had DM'd me saying, hey, you're getting esports button in about 10 minutes, so keep it clean. I was like, oh my, okay. That's not something I expected, nor you know, ever had in the back of my mind. But you know, I have I was like, there's no problem. Like, I don't have to change the way anything's going. It was a clean cast anyway. But yeah, that was them being proactive and thinking of ways that they could just make the community tournaments better. And like Yemi said, the same thing with prize money. You know, both sponsoring lots of community tournaments and even increasing the amount of money that you can run a community tournament with. You used to have a $5,000 limit, which really did limit a lot of what you could do. But yeah, Psyonix have been very proactive these days. They've been very, you know, involved in all the community stuff. So it's been a great change. And so much has changed, actually, in the past year for the better. It's really a different landscape now. So many more opportunities for new TOs to come in and do something cool.
For sure. And I think the biggest thing there is just an increase in accessibility, right? Being able to have more opportunities for, you know, these kind of B tier and C tier teams to come in and show themselves and whilst providing content and whilst putting on display, because I think that's the way to grow. And it's definitely difficult, especially when you look into other esports like League and CS and even Valorant in some of those communities where they don't have as much actively organized self-player driven tournaments and communities that enables them to really have that structured drive. So I guess this is going to be kind of an opinionated approach, but from an outlook into the Rocket League competitive scene, tasty do you think it looks like for some of these players to get involved and start to think about, hey, I want to be a Rocket League pro?
Well, this is all lined up, you know, with the what I just said with kind of the new leadership of Sonics, with also Rocket League going free to play. I think that's been a huge error. And I think even RLCS and esports in Rocket League has to define itself pre and post free to play as its era. And the thing is, we haven't yet really seen a lot of the free to play players get into the professional level play. But what we can tell from the trajectory of Rocket League and how they have constantly managed it in a way that's like, we're not going to go super overboard and run a $100 million tournament and then have it die in the next couple of years. but we're going to slowly grow and always be at a fathomable depth. That means that we're looking at a Rocket League that's going to be here for 5-10 years. And there are veteran level players that are retiring. There are slots filling up. So there are people who could come in now and still become a professional player, even though they are years behind.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a definitely interesting outlook. And I think being able to have that opportunity for entry into the scene is crucial. And that's what's going to help to keep, you know, Rocket League still competitive in the next years to come.
Yeah, I would agree. I think especially with how much content there is and how fast you can learn things, it's a lot easier now to learn how to be good at Rocket League than it was in the past because there's just more correct information being put out there. And some people think all the mechanics have been discovered, but I don't know. Maybe they haven't. Maybe there's another mechanic that hasn't been discovered yet, and everybody's going to have to go and master. But I don't think Rocket League is going anywhere. I think, you know, even beyond 5-10 years, I think it's got such a unique spot in the esports scene that it doesn't really have I don't think any competition. You know, a lot of other games, the players are picking between that game and another game because they're good at both. Rocket League pros, they all suck at League of Legends. They're all terrible at Valorant. They're all so bad at other games, they got nowhere to go. They're all stuck in Rocket League. So they're not going anywhere. But no, jokes aside, it's such a unique and easy to watch esport, the most accessible esport. I think just the best viewing experience as an esport, the easiest to broadcast because you know how long a broadcast is going to be, apart from, you know, if there's technical issues, which is a separate issue. It's made for this, you know. I don't think that it's going to go anywhere. I think the Psyonix have done a good job, and I think I have faith in that team to continue the growth that they currently have rolling. And yeah, there's always a lot of doubters whenever you have a big off season, or you know, whenever you go along without a patch happening, they think, oh, Rocket League's dead. But every time that people have said that, it's come back even bigger. So I don't think anything's going to change in that regard.
Mm-hmm. And you also talk about, I mean, the ability to switch between games. That can't be true for everything, because I've seen Lockie, who self-proclaimed LEM in CSGO, managed to D-rank himself to bronze.
Because I was playing with Kami and CJ.
They were plat, and you D-ranked to bronze.
Because it's a different mechanic system. I just don't like Valorant.
The movement's
it is
hard.
The movement. It is the movement. The movement's difficult. I don't like the movement in Valorant. I'm not a fan.
Shoot their heads.
Hey, CJ can back me up when we played Wingman on CS. He can back me up. Mm-hmm. He can back me up. I guess another kind of question I wanted to really bring up is this whole idea of, as a shoutcaster, dealing with criticism. Now, obviously, it's one of these things where, you know, a lot of players or people that, you know, have been concurrently playing, maybe in the minor leagues, and are interested in shoutcasting, are interested in getting into content creation and kind of bridging that divide. How difficult is it, or was it, when you first started to shoutcast, dealing with criticism, dealing with toxicity and overcoming that mindset?
Well, I know for Johnny Boy, he's always so self-confident and so like blasé that I feel like he doesn't even worry about it unless it's criticism from someone he really respects, right?
Yeah. Obviously, I would treat it differently if, you know, a co-worker, you know, a co-caster told me something. Obviously, I would listen. But if someone, an armchair analyst on Reddit, says something, probably just going to have a laugh about it. You know, it's not where I would look for to, or it's not where I would look to get any advice to improve at this stage in my career. But I say at this stage because I did in the past, and I would in the past look at comments more because it was just something I'm getting started with, and I want to see, okay, how do people actually like this? I don't know if they do. So I would look at the comments and see what people can advise me on. And yeah, I did learn a lot from just the community in the past, but I think now it's very difficult to learn from the community because I think that genuinely Rocket League commentary is at a pretty good place. I think everybody's actually, well, at least on the main broadcasts, are really, really good at what they do. So it's not at that really early days where if you look back 4 or 5 years ago, the casting was pretty bad. You know, there were things that could be pointed out by you know, community and just on social media that would be true and you could learn from. But now I think it's actually pretty good. So it's more about the small refinements and about the small changes that are better when you take it from someone who actually knows you and knows your craft well and what's going on behind the scenes. It's not like a complete style change like it was back in the day. Yeah, I do agree with what Yummy said, though. It doesn't bother me when I see comments about people who don't like my content, my casting, whatever it is, me, my personality. Yeah, it doesn't bother me because you can't please everyone. But it doesn't mean you shouldn't like try to. I guess my theory on that is you can't please everyone, so don't be upset when you clearly don't. It's not something to worry about. But I do think one of the things that I've stuck to, and I believe is the reason that people are usually just either okay at worst about my casting, is try not to be annoying. when you're casting. Because I know that there's some casters who think that being edgy and being, you know, whoa, look how crazy I am. This is, wow, that was really awkward. How cool and awkward is that? I totally disagree with this kind of way of casting. I think that if you're making the viewer feel awkward, you're doing a bad job. If you're making them feel uncomfortable, yeah, you're probably doing a bad job. You can make jokes. You can make, you know, jabs at your co-caster without making the viewer think that you're arguing or having a bad time. And yeah, that's probably another big one, is just actually try and seem like you're enjoying yourself. Because sometimes I listen to casting, I'm thinking, do these guys even want to be here? Do they even like this game? Do they like casting this game? It doesn't sound like it. They're just like, so, they sound so sad. And if you took everything that they're saying and just said it with a smile, it would be fine. But because they're not smiling, because they're sad boy hours, it sounds terrible. So that's kind of my take on the whole, don't try and please everybody. Some people use it as an excuse. You can't please everyone, so don't. Mm. It's not. It shouldn't be as an excuse. It's more like, don't let it bother you when somebody doesn't like you. But you should still strive to be the best and that you can be. And definitely don't be an annoying caster. Just let people enjoy the game. Don't ruin their immersion with bad patter or banter, I should say. The English word.
It's super funny as well that you say that, because I kind of went the opposite direction. Sort of, I started as a caster purely focusing on not being bad and like being palatable to everyone, and I achieved that. But I, at the same time, I never felt like, at the time, I didn't have like a great strength. I didn't have a reason for people to really love me, or, you know, that I felt like was amazing or anything like that. I didn't work on what was good at the same time, so I was like a really good mid-level caster who people just didn't dislike. And I think part of that was, you know, most of the people I got feedback from was from players, and players and viewers are often likely to give, you were dumb, you said this wrong, this sounded stupid, you're an idiot, more on the negative feedback if you're making mistakes, rather than saying this was good, which is important when it comes to that feedback. And I'm kind of the opposite of Johnny Boy. If I see one negative comment and 20 positive comments, my brain instantly focuses on that negative comment. Mm-hmm. And like, I get that pit in your stomach, kind of, oh man, I suck feeling. But I have gotten better at it. But on the same note, I still go through comments and I still read it up. There's not usually a single comment that is directly helpful. A lot of feedback is a lot of like, I hate this caster.
Yeah, feedback.
And exactly. It's not feedback, but you can actually, or I have gained a lot of improvement from comments of people not giving serious feedback, because I've then taken those kind of moments and try to figure out, okay, what is that person disliking about me in that space? You know, I had somebody persons like say, oh, that guy's just yelling. You know, and I'm like, that's not really at the time very useful feedback. But I went through and looked at the cast, and what was actually happening is that like my energy level was kind of going here and then jumping really solidly when you kind of want to have a bit of a smoother curve. And me, with the knowledge that I have, can figure that out. I had to dig deep on a negative comment that made me feel bad. So I do seek them out, but they definitely make me feel bad. They always will. And that usually means that when I am talking to other casters about what they're doing, at least nowadays, I try and be soft about things and give full-on feedback rather than straight criticism, because, you know, if they're feeling bad, then there's a chance that they won't ever learn from you.
I don't think, by the way, that Yummy, you fall into the category of casters I was describing at all, where, you know, it's just people trying to be awkward and annoy the viewer. And I don't know what's going on with that. But yeah, you've got a very like just dry delivery that I'm sure some people just won't get, because, you know, across borders, different countries, that's not really a thing. So yeah, it might just take, but you know, it might just take a while for some people to get it. But yeah, I think once people do get it, generally, you're a very popular guy. I know you and CJ as a duo were extremely popular when you commentated my the twos part of Fusion last year on my channel. People were loving it because it was just so funny and different. You're just roasting CJ all the time, so you could definitely do that as well. I think it's actually awesome that you can have that in a commentary pair, because some casters really struggle to be able to naturally just roast the other caster that they're with without it feeling awkward. Obviously, so that's not something that you struggle with at all when you're casting with CJ, because he's so easy to make fun of. But for other casters, you know, they try and roast their buddy, and it's like, oh, it's a bit awkward, isn't it? It doesn't really work.
Offensive or whatever.
Yeah, you can definitely learn from comments still to this day. But yeah, it's usually just hateful comments, like you said. Like, I just don't like this guy. This guy's so annoying. And it always feels like they're hiding under the rock until you do something.
But I am annoying.
Like,
it's driving right at my heart. I understand.
This is my chance to get him. He messed up his word. He tried to, you know, he tried to throw to a break, and it was the desk. What an idiot! And, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, you can still like see useful stuff. Maybe somebody will write something like, "Yummy cheese man is so annoying. He really needs to shave. And his mic keeps clipping." And you're like, oh, it is? Hold on. You go check. Oh, yeah, he's right. It is clipping. Thank you, hater, for helping me improve my production value. Good. You know, just using the trying to read between all of the pointless hate to find anything that can actually be useful. Take it, steal it from them. Then they're in the past, you know, gone. Not to be thought of.
That's actually a huge point, too. If you want to avoid haters, weirdly enough, the better the quality of your mic and everything, the better you'll be as a caster.
Yeah, that's true.
Obviously, there's certain things that can't get past it, but if you've got a mic that peaks or goes louder than whatever, or can't handle you screaming or yelling or a louder volume at all, then you will sound like a bad caster. It doesn't matter how good of a caster you are. I just remember a couple of tournaments before I bought this mic, and I was like, oh man, I'm a terrible caster. I bought the mic and I'm like, man, I sound great.
I'm amazing. That's awesome.
Hell yeah. And I mean, I guess taking away from that, is it important to go into casting with that preconceived underlying mindset that, you know, mistakes are inevitable. We all make them from time to time, and it's being able to push past those mistakes and look towards the potential opportunities?
Yeah, one thing for sure. That's actually interesting. What do you think about when you're getting into a cast, Yummy? What are the things you're going over that you think, okay, I got to do this. These are my things I'm aiming at.
I mean, going into a cast, I actually, and probably again, an opposite caster of you, I'm very nervous as a person. I sometimes still get nervous doing small jobs. Like I got nervous doing an ESL one weekend just locally down the road and stuff like that. I do get very nervous. For me, all of my prep is usually about emptying my head as much as possible, maybe having one thing about what I want to say. But I will say, to directly go to the question Lockie brings on, is that I did struggle for a long time in my early days when I was both managing production and casting at the same time. So it's an extra step of things to think about, that with things going wrong and that getting into your head and thinking about it too much. And it is just a real, real skill to just go with the flow and just go with the now and not dwell on the mistakes. And it sounds interesting, but the biggest thing I've learned from casting, and casting is all mental side, but it does apply to the mentality of being a player, is that it's just something you got to acknowledge, understand that that's going on. So understand that I'm dwelling on a mistake that, say, production made that makes me look like an idiot because I'm also running production, and just be able to not worry about it and continue on. And you have to actively focus on that, just like you would if you were practicing flip resets. Just go over it, go over the thing you're trying to practice, even if it's mental, and just keep that in your mind the entire time. And that's how I managed to get through. So I'm actually really good nowadays and not worrying about my mistakes while I'm casting. I'll focus on it afterwards and beat myself up afterwards.
Yeah, you're just going to try and continue. Just get on with it. But if somebody does, I mean, in the online casting era, this happens a lot more. You know, if you accidentally talk over each other or if somebody accidentally, you know, does something wrong, says the wrong team or whatever, it's a bit more awkward. Well, it's a bit more difficult, I should say, to just naturally move on from that, especially if you talk at the same time, because you actually don't know a lot of time. Well, actually, who's supposed to be talking? Because there's like the slight delay from the online. Usually we'll use Discord to talk to each other. So it's a slight delay there. And then plus you can't see each other. But one of the things we did for RLCS championships was we joined, what do you call it? The OBS Ninja
Tricast.
As well as the Google Hangouts to send our feed to the broadcast. So we're in a Google Hangouts to send our mic and our video to the broadcast. We're also, me, Turtle, and Shogun are in a OBS Ninja so that we can see each other, all muted. And then we're using Discord so we can hear each other. Very confusing. But yeah, with the wonders of technology, it is possible. And it was mainly Turtle, actually, who was using that to his advantage, because me and Shogun cast together a lot. But he wanted to be the third voice in the trio. And when it gets to the hype moments and the end of games, we just said, just wave your arms around like a madman if you want to say something. And if you're not waving your arms around like a madman, me and Shogun will just bounce off each other really fast, because that's how we like to finish games anyway. And it was great because we could just see Tarl just going, just arms waving all over the place, double windmill. So yeah, that's really helpful. But yeah, you just got to move on from it. Somebody's, you know, talk at the same time, no biggie, just keep working. You say the wrong team name, maybe that's an opportunity to take a jab at your co-caster for getting it wrong if it's like maybe early on in a game. Probably not if it's in the final 10 seconds and it's hype, but yeah. I don't worry about it too much. You might be unsurprised to hear. I think I'm more thinking about just I don't really have to worry about doing catches and throws. Yummy, you do, don't you? You have to catch and throw from breaks and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't do that.
I've kind of transitioned into play-by-play host role 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Now.
Harder.
I rarely make mistakes on my... Well, I'm not really making many catches anyway, only on RLCS. But when I'm throwing to break, the number of times that I have said something that I just haven't wanted to say, it has just been different, or I've combined two sentences to throw to a break, or I've said "be right back" three times as we go to a break. I managed to keep it together for about 2 seconds most of the time for it to go to the screen and me to go, I can't hit my head.
It's really annoying. That's a much harder thing to do. I've done it, you know, many times for smaller tournaments, but usually I'm the color caster in the bigger broadcast. So I never have to do the catches or the throws, which is great. I mean, sometimes I'll do it anyway, because it's really you know, unfortunate timing, I guess. Like Shogun will be talking, and he'll stop talking, and as soon as I start talking, the production will just say throw to break fast or something, like throw to break now, and we're like, I'll just do it. I'm not gonna like stop talking after three words to show you throw to break, so oh whatever, fine. Like sometimes you just really, they really want you to throw to break right this very second, so you just have to do it. But yeah, I don't really have to worry about it at all, which is nice. I'm just thinking about, you know, stupid puns I can make of the player names and things like that.
Yeah, I feel if you had a camera on me, like while I was casting, I do make regular mistakes, and every single time I like finish talking and I hand off to Jake or CJ, whoever I'm casting with, I'm just
really
like,
no way.
Just buys out of the move on. Like my co-casters must think I'm like eternally struggling.
If you are on camera,
but Jake's the only one who sees it at the moment, because he's the only one I cast with in person. So I guess online helps in that regard.
Oh no, yeah, you can't be doing that. That's some bad. That body language is negative. It's gonna, if you're doing negative body language, it's gonna.
It's
make
just
you
like
feel
when
bad.
You say something that is like just clearly wrong or stupid as a color kind of point.
Yeah,
know? You're just like, why did I say that? It didn't come. My words didn't come out what my brain was thinking.
Well, one day, Yummy. One day, what you'll like. I think Rocket League 3s is made to make casters. I think the whole game, honestly, exists just to make casters sound stupid at times, because you're like, wow, this team is defending so well. They haven't put a foot wrong. Somebody whiffs and they concede immediately, and you're just thinking, why am I even here? What am I doing here? Like, this is so ridiculous. As soon as I say something, the opposite happens. It happens a lot in threes because it's very chaotic and very fast paced. And some, you know, a team's doing great, and then somebody gets dunked on and it bounces in off the ceiling into their net. So yeah, that's, I guess, where the caster curse comes from. But it doesn't happen, I think, as often in 1v1. It's one of the things I like 1v1 more for, is it's actually a lot easier as a caster to tell the story of the game, because there's less random stuff going on and less people flying around trying to hit worldies off of each other's backboards. So yeah, threes is just made to make you sound stupid. You just gotta accept that.
Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting point you bring up, because I remember having a chat with apparently Jack, and he said that if threes wasn't the most dominant game mode, then ones would be the most dominant game mode that would be played. And do you agree with that?
I guess it's entirely up to what Psyonix want to do. I mean, they're the ones who called threes standard. Mm. They called it ones, twos, and standard. So I guess it's really just up to them. If they wanted to make twos the esport, then it would have been twos. If they wanted it to be ones, it would have been ones. But I think what apparently Jack is referring to is probably that 1v1 is very popular as a viewing experience. It's not as popular to play. If you look at the playlist, 2v2 has the most players because it's less stressful. 1v1 is extremely stressful to play, so most people don't want to put themselves in that environment. They'd rather play twos because it's kind of the balance. It's not as fast-paced and chaotic in threes, where you've got two teammates up front never rotating and you're just sitting in defense waiting for them to finally come back so you can do something fun. Twos, you get a shot at both. You get to go actually make plays in the ball, but it isn't that stressful, so it's the most popular. But yeah, I think ones is definitely got the potential to be the most hype viewing experience for sure. I mean, as somebody who's watched a lot of ones and a lot of threes, I could tell you there's been way more scripted endings in ones, more regularly scripted endings in ones, where you just think, this is ridiculous. How has this happened? Like a 7 goal comeback in 2 minutes, or, you know, I've seen so many 5 goal comebacks, 6 goal comebacks, where someone is just in the zone and they're scoring every shot at the end of a game. And you can't get that in threes. It's just not possible. So ones has got a higher turnover of hype matches and hype goals these days, because players are so mechanical. They can just do whatever they want, really. Double, triple, flip, reset, no biggie. Yeah, go for it. Yeah, it's actually viable in ones. You've got that space to make slow plays. And yeah, there's a lot more decisions as well. So from a casting perspective, there's a lot more to talk about, because there's more decisions being made. You can talk about the things that players are actually, why they're doing certain things, instead of a lot of times in threes, well, what are the teams trying to do here? Well, they're just trying to get to the ball before the other team and hit it past them, because you don't really, that's the best option a lot of the time. It's not the threes players aren't smart. It's just that's the smartest option. Go quick, get it past the guy that that's trying to beat you to the ball in a position that one of your teammates can follow up on. Just keep doing that. Steal boost, hit some demos. There you go. You're the best team in the world. Maybe the meta will develop more, but right now threes is very just extremely organized, I think, and it's just waiting for someone to make a miss hit or get a bad 50-50 or for somebody to just pop off and go really fast.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like ones has that ability to really demonstrate a player's individual raw skill, right?
Mm-hmm. You get a lot of it in threes, but obviously in ones, it's just so viscerally mental. You can actually see the decisions that people are making, and you have such wildly different play styles that are so obvious to the viewer almost, between like one player playing super defensively, Kuxi always running back to defend, or another player going hyper-aggressive, trying to make a lot of plays. It brings out more of something that I actually do think Rocket League is somewhat missing in terms of its esports scene, and that is personality on the pitch. You know, I look at Dota or League of Legends or, you know, anything like that. You've got Dota is my game from back in the day. You've got your top laner who plays this hero and plays this way. And I like that guy because I also play top lane. That's my thing. That's my role. That's his. He actually has a personality on the field, not just off the field. And I think you get a lot more of that in ones than you ever get in threes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There are, and that's a lot of the reason why I think people gravitate towards people who score a lot of goals, because that's just an easy way to see somebody. He's playing really aggressive. He's usually like very mechanical or fast, whatever it is that player in threes is. You can look at that and be like, this is that guy. He's super awesome. And people get ignored at the back just because you don't actually get to see them do as much, and you don't get to see their in-game personality shine.
Bigger pitch, yummy. We need a bigger pitch for 3v3. Because you see personality, I mean, you see different play styles in twos, albeit to a lesser degree than ones, which is, of course, always going to have the biggest variety of play styles that are viable. But I think if the pitch was maybe just a bit longer, threes might see more variety. Maybe you want it maybe a bit longer and wider. But yeah, it's not something that I've ever heard being on the horizon. So we might just be sticking with the current pitch size, which is fine. Like I think Rocket League 3 is, like I said, is the most watchable esport, and it's got a great future. I don't think it's going anywhere anytime soon. But I totally agree with Yomi. Players find it more and more difficult now to do something that other players aren't doing, and to be different, to have a personality on the field, because everybody is getting better and better and better. And if you think eventually everybody's just going to be able to do all of the things that are viable in threes, because there's less things that are viable in threes because of how fast the game needs to be played and how compact everybody has to be and organized everybody has to be.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, in my opinion, the closest thing to personality in threes, I feel like, is this defined team culture, right? We have teams where they play and they pop off, and then we have teams that they play and they're a little bit more reserved and a little bit more calm when they score. So how important do you think it is for a team to have a defined team culture? And I guess, for an example, who are some of the teams that you like that have a good team culture?
Well, I mean, I feel like this is a question for you, Lockie. I mean, what happened to the team culture of Renegades that they came in third place? They were meant to be a great team.
He snuck it in.
This coach.
He snuck it in.
And what happens? They don't even make it to the championships. Is that a team culture thing?
No, that wasn't a team culture thing. I mean, to be fair, I was playing with the team culture and really understanding the dynamics and the mindset of the lads coming into the last split, and that was really just me getting on board with everyone, really understanding their own individual mindset and really understanding the team culture that CJ and Kami had already developed. And then obviously adding in Fever to the mix, the demon that he is, it was important to really understand how he brought some sort of culture to the team and how we could embed that and work around that. So I think, you know, right about now, we've really established a pretty good team culture, so we're really looking forward to next season.
So you're pawning off any blame from yourself.
I am.
That's an interesting one. I mean, as far as performance goes, I think Rocket League is so young right now, it's impossible to say what the perfect team culture is, or I guess the, you know, attitude between players is to maximize performance, just because maybe a team is going to come along who are so openly toxic to each other and yelling at each other, but they're just the best team. And then you can't really argue with results. Yeah. Maybe they're just going to be, I mean, it varies player to player. Some people thrive when they're being yelled at and being openly criticized. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more common in sports than in esports, I feel. But I used to play football growing up, and some players were so, I guess, just, they weren't able to reach their peak level until somebody just yelled at them, and then suddenly it's like now they've got that adrenaline rush and they're really playing at their playing their best game. Other players, they get yelled at by the coach at halftime, they just like crumble and they just lose all their confidence. So it varies player to player, and I've yet to see that really happen in Rocket League. So I think in esports, it's more likely that the players who end up at the top are more mellow, especially for a young game like Rocket League. So it's not surprising that having a positive team atmosphere usually yields results, but maybe in the future the toxic team's going to come along and they're just going to thrive. They're going to be yelling at each other. Teams are not going to know what to do with them. But it hasn't happened yet.
Well, I mean, that could be a subtle dig at season 9 Dignitas.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it can work. You know, it could definitely work. I mean, you've seen it many times in sports. I watched what was a Michael Jordan documentary on Netflix recently. It doesn't sound like that was a very positive team atmosphere, but they won everything. So You know, you see it in sports all the time, is players yelling at each other and teammates yelling at each other. The coach, like I think in football, coaches are and managers are predominantly known for yelling and being terrifying to the players. And the players are all scared of the manager because he's yelling at halftime. That's normal in sports, and it's been proven to get results. So maybe one day in esports.
I mean, for you, you hit the nail on the head for me, because I just think where you're describing is that everybody just has to be on the same page culturally. And I think that's missing quite a lot in Rocket League, because you can be successful with a culture that is yelling at each other, a professional culture, a bunch of mates having a fun time, as long as they're all on the same page, kind of have a very similar motivation, it's going to work out. So for me, the teams with the best culture are teams that are mindful of what their culture is. And I know for me, the one that stands out is Ground Zero, because part of or a major part of their leadership, they kind of have two coaches, one being Daniel Bonnar, the sleep psych, the other being Jimmer, who is very mentality oriented and also works a lot with Daniel Bonnar in terms of more of the psychology, the sports science side of things. They are very specific about their culture itself, you know, and what the core tenets are of their team, so they can be on the same page. And they're about like having fun and experimenting, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, you could have the same thing. And in fact, if you were to go back to my old team that was actually really successful in OCE, the culture of that would be completely the opposite. We were very professional. We didn't hang out outside of scrims. We didn't hang out outside of tournaments. We were friendly. We enjoyed each other, but it was a very professional relationship. We played the game. We played it seriously. We came to scrims. We played that seriously, and we gave each other serious, open feedback, and we'd be able to take that really well without it affecting any kind of friendship at the same time. I would say we're still friends, but we weren't a friend group. The culture was professionally, and I think we were lucky in that regard, in that we just kind of landed on that because we never like talked about it. But if I knew then what I know now, I would have sat down with us and talked about what we want to be, what our culture should be as a team, so we can be on the same page.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's important because, I mean, as Johnny mentioned, you know, I used to coach rugby. So I used to coach rugby, and a lot of those guys love to just – they love getting yelled at, right? But then you look at another player who I used to coach in StarCraft, and you used to say, like, you know, why'd you do this? And he would just absolutely crumble. So it's about, you know, having a very individualistic approach towards how you cater and develop a team culture, and that's going to really set the pace towards how the team controls and views themselves going here on out. And I mean, that really kind of drives the question in my mind when you compare Rocket League to CS, Valorant, and League of Legends. All of those games have teams of five players, right? But Rocket League has teams of three. So how does that impact the dynamic and the team culture where you have two other people to communicate with versus five?
Well, it's much more intimate, right? Like it is a burden for a lot of, or a curse, and also a boon for a lot of people. You know, it's nice not having to organize a large group of people, but interpersonal relationships become so much more important. There are a lot of CSGO teams, five-man Dota teams, whatever, League of Legends, and very strictly, they're not worried about their friendships. But if you insult somebody in a Rocket League team, if you give some feedback in a way that is too negatively geared or something like that, that somebody takes offense to, then it can cascade and you kind of have such a tight bond with them that it falls apart. And then if it falls apart and you lose one member of your team, you've lost a third of your entire team, and your team could go from roaring heights to massive failure in one night.
Yeah, it's a tough one, especially with the two-thirds rule that was implemented a lot of the time. I don't know if it still is, or you know, between seasons because of the new you know, not non-league structure. But it's it's especially been difficult for some teams because you know they know all the time, like, oh, hold on a second, are my teammates trying to kick me here and get a new player? Maybe I should talk to one of them and discuss kicking the other guy because that'll protect my career. Like, it kind of gave players this conflict of interest because to protect their own careers, it was smarter to just talk to one of their teammates and say, hey, we should kick that guy because that guarantees their spot for the next season. Luckily, I don't think that's really as much of a thing anymore because of the new format. It's easier for teams to stick it out and still have a shot of making that big run. But man, there were some really weird situations in the past. I always just remember the Cassio one where he got told by his team that who was his teammates at the time? Was it Tadpole and Ronicky or someone or Speed? I don't remember. Mm-hmm. They told him that they were trying out new thirds and that he was not off the team yet. But I mean, when you hear that, what else are you going to think other than you're off the team? So he went and found a new team who happened to be the team that just missed out on RLCS by one place. They came third in the promotion tournament. But then the team that he got kicked off, their transfer fell through and one of the players left the team. So then I think it was Tadpole told Cassio, hey, can you come back? Because that'll keep our two thirds. So we'll still have a team for next season. He said, actually, no, you have no team. And that means that there's one less team in RLCS, which means that my new team get into RLCS. So I'm in. And that was Veloce, so they had the most ridiculous beginning, but it's all because, you know, there was that, struggle between, okay, we kind of want to try new players because players want to be in the best team that they can be. And that, you know, they've identified a player they think is a weak link, but then their star player gets sniped and you're like, oh no, what do we do now? We've got to get the other guy back and he doesn't want to come back because we just pseudo kicked him. It's a bit of a weird one, the two thirds. But I mean, what other ways are to do it? I think the nature of having three players in a team.
Yeah, I think it's a very interesting dynamic, and it really sets the pace for, I guess, how the esports played out. Being able to have, I guess, as you mentioned, Yami, a lot more intimate relationship, and that really sets the pace for viewership as well, where you have three people that are really taking reins and control of the team. You mentioned, you know, obviously Grand Zero, and you know, big shout outs to their recent performance in OCE. And I mean, I've had this conversation with a couple of other players within CS and Valorant, and it's always a controversial one, and I'd love to get both of your opinions on it. Do you think it's fair that you have one organization who has the backing of physiotherapists, chefs, sports psychologists to enter into a league and those people versus a team with none of that backing?
I mean, strictly it's not fair, but I mean,
how do we control
in terms
that?
Of how it goes, I think it's fair enough. Like, it's not ethically incorrect to be able to have those kind of extra things. Because I know a lot of players who, if I said, hey, I'm going to get you a nutritionist and an exercise, a fitness person, a personal trainer, they'd just laugh at that and they wouldn't want to do it because they're not thinking about that side. That aspect of it, at least when I come in. And then you'll have other people who are like really genuinely interested in figuring out the best way to be the best player in every single facet. Mm-hmm. And that's how you do get those advantages from those teams. I don't know how you would make that fairer. I mean, obviously League of Legends has had some experiments in the past where they've, say, in Australia, enforced that every team has to have a manager and a gaming house that everybody lives in, et cetera, et cetera.
Really? Wow.
So they all would have pretty equivalent facilities. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to Rocket League, I mean, you might even have a team that's not even got an org at that particular point in time.
Yeah.
And I guess at least from a casting perspective, it makes for an interesting story.
It does. I personally think I think it's fine because, you know, there are just different preferences and there are different personalities and players who, like Yami said, won't want that kind of thing. But yeah, the reason I think it would, it's also just probably the best thing right now is because it's just, I can't see the alternative. I don't think there's a way to balance that. And I don't think it necessarily needs balancing, because if a team comes along with no org backing and, you know, absolutely nobody but them, they don't even have a substitute. I think you actually have to have a substitute before you can sign up, but maybe they don't have anybody but themselves and they just show up and they completely stomp like an org, and they've got the team house, they've got the, you know, seven different coaches. They've got people tying their shoes for them so that they don't have to touch anything but a Rocket League controller. And they just get clapped by these three guys who have absolutely no backing. I think that's kind of cool that you can do that. You don't need to have all of that to succeed. It opens the door a lot more to, you know, people who otherwise might not have the opportunity. But yeah, I think it's just inevitable. I mean, you get that in sports as well. Some teams have far more facilities than others. And some teams have way more money to play with in the off season than others. You're going to get that. And it does still provide a great story in sports when the team with no money you know, no facilities can just go and beat the biggest team in the country and they win something. You know, it happens every now and again. So, for lack of any way to fix it other than maybe, I guess, franchising, I think this is probably just the best way to keep it for now. I mean, franchising, I don't really know too much about it other than what I've seen in League of Legends. But that was, I used to watch League of Legends years ago. Before, I watched the early seasons, and then I think I watched the first franchise season. Then I stopped watching. I don't think I stopped because of franchising, but I was just like, I wasn't interested anymore at the time. But yeah, I don't know. For me, franchising, it seems like I think it would be the wrong route for Rocket League personally. It's the only way that you could make those balancing acts and make sure every team has the same facilities, the same amount of coaches, etc. And I don't like franchising personally. But I don't know. Maybe it's actually the way to go. And I'm an idiot, but yeah, not for me right now.
Now we've gone way too far the other way to the circuit system to bring franchising in. I think it's literally impossible now. It was possible with the old system, with leagues, but now that idea is, you'd have to change Rocket League so drastically all the way back to a different system again in order to bring in franchising. But I want to check with you, Johnny, how excited are you in terms of a team getting backing and supporting, because I'm really excited for this. How excited are you for True Neutral to be going to North America?
Yeah, that's true. They're going to Mexico, right, to play in the US. That's interesting. I wonder, I don't know what part of Mexico are they in. Do you know what part of Mexico? Because I imagine if they're close to the US border, they're going to have a pretty good connection. But if they're further in, like south, I don't think their connection would be that good, because I've seen some of the Mexican players play and they get, you know, somewhere in the region of 100 ping. I don't know, like I said, I don't know what part of Mexico they're from, like False and his team. They all had like 100 ping, I believe. So, you know, maybe they're going to get all of the RLCS games that they played on the central server, so it's closer to them. Would make sense, in my opinion. But as far as I know, East is the priority, and if any team requests East server, it's put on East, even if the majority of players in the lobby are central. Unless there's a rule change to accommodate some kind of different server selection, I think they might have some issues because of the location. I'm not sure what the internet connection is like, but either way, super cool. I'm excited to see how that goes. Hope that they do well. I think they're a great team, and that's definitely going to give them better practice, more access to scrims, and more competitive events to be a part of. So yeah, great to see. Awesome to see an org willing to do that, and really excited to see what the players can do.
Hell yeah, shouts to them. And I guess that kind of drives that kind of next question, is that importance of having regional differences. Say, for example, GZ went to NA or EU, then they would no longer really feel like that we have that kind of OCE scene, if that makes sense. So do you think it's important to have distinct regions where that competitiveness lays?
I don't know. I mean, I miss LANs, all I can say. Like, and There is right now a massive feeling of a lack of competitiveness. And we have the Intel World Open in this kind of off-season times that just feels like a even less competitive RLCS event because people are restricted by country somewhat rather than just being in the region. And, you know, when you cut off international events, there's just strictly not as a higher level of competition. Obviously, if you had a team like Ground Zero leave OCE, and when you have a team like True Neutral leaving South America, that is going to make those regions not just a little bit worse because they're losing one team, but drastically worse because those two regions have smaller amounts of teams, smaller amounts of competition, and so the top end gets drastically cut. But you still get some more prize money. I mean, like your Rebel and your Furia are going to be super excited about the fact that they're probably going to be taking home 90% of the prize money.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird one, especially for the fans in those regions, because I'm sure fans of the players and of True Neutral are really excited because this is going to definitely be a career upgrade for them just in terms of exposure and opportunities. And everybody probably just wants to know, well, let's see what does happen when you don't have the massive ping disadvantage because they play USE servers anyway. Let's run it. So it's really intriguing. I don't think you can really blame them. If you are a fan of South American Rocket League, you want South American Rocket League to be the best that it can be. Obviously, this is a blow to Sam. But the players have to be selfish. Esports is too short of a career to be, wasting opportunities. If you have the opportunity to go to a bigger league, which in NA it is a lot bigger, where there's more viewers, there's probably going to be more money on the table. Take it. Obviously, if Ground Zero get the same opportunity, same thing. You know, it'd be entirely up to them. Do they want to move all that distance across the world? Because that's really the difficult part, is actually moving into a place that you're not familiar with, and to live in a different country is hard. I know, obviously, in Mexico and Argentina and Chile, where the True Neutral players are from, they all speak Spanish, so they're going to probably be fine. And same thing for Australia. If the Australian team moved to America, it wouldn't be a problem. But, you know, some people talk about, why don't SRG just move to Europe and play there? Well, that's okay. Now that's a cultural difference, the Middle East and Europe, and probably a language barrier. That's a lot different. It's exciting. It's exciting. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong thing to do. It really just is up to the players and what they want to do. Do they just want to stay where they are, be the best team in the region, or do they want to go and test themselves against the tougher competition and have a shot at even more greatness? Harder path, probably not favorites to make, top six or whatever it is that you need to get to lands and to get to worlds. But they've got that, that shot that maybe they can go to the moon and win big. So they're taking a gamble. It's exciting to see. What is this, like some kind of leak though? Are Ground Zero making? Are they seeing that and thinking, maybe we should do that?
No, that was
actually
just purely theoretical.
Didn't go well for Drippy, but I don't
Lockie's
think
hoping
fault.
So that finally Renegades can come top two.
Oh, there he is again.
That's the dream.
Thrown in again. Thrown
maybe
under the
Renegades
bus.
Should go USA and just go full content. See, USA is the content location. That's where most of the big content creators are. So there's that opportunity as well for collaborations, which you've also got to consider. It's a big part of like long-term income for pro Rocket League players and pro esport players is the content side. It's not gaming. It's not prize money. It's not pro player salary, which has probably got a time limit. It's the content. So that's where the players also have to be thinking about. And going to America, got to be good for content. Going to Europe even, got to be good. But not as good. I think America's the top location for the content.
Hell yeah.
Plus, Renegades do have a facility in Detroit.
Well, they are an NA org.
And you can find, you can actually find ranked matches in NA. That also helps for streaming. Doesn't help when you only get one match every 15 minutes. In fact, nowadays, Kami's been streaming a lot, and he pretty much is exclusively playing on US West.
US West is so free, though. Me, Kami, and Yummy played on US West, and we were absolutely farming the Grand Champ 2 range. They were no match for our 180 ping gameplay. They weren't ready for the Kings of Ping. But definitely even more farming possible when you're in there with the stable connection.
I know when the lads will be watching this back, they'll be licking their lips thinking about moving to NA.
That's cool. I mean, it's a cool thing to think about because I know that there's been some success for OCE teams in the past, not so much at the very recent RLCS lands. I say very recent, not so recent now with COVID, but the most recent RLCS lands, not as much success. But, you know, CJ and Kami, they took a 3-0 series off PSG at a DreamHack, and the, you know, NRG have lost two times to, I think it was Chiefs and then Alpha Sydney. There have been results for OCE teams, and if they're willing to put the work in, I'm sure they could get to that level again.
Well, the fun thing is obviously Rona has set back, especially a region like Oceania, so separated. Prior to to COVID, all of the contracts, or so many of the contracts of top teams in the region, you know, your top three who are expected to go international, were less about the salary, because salaries are always hard to negotiate in those regions, or have a little bit of a salary, like nothing that's even a part-time job, but was so much about you have to take us to this many dream hacks. You have to give us this amount of weeks of boot camps in NA or EU every year. And they had so much around that. And so the value of the contracts of these players all of a sudden went up in a puff of smoke because coronavirus, although they probably made more than that in terms of the additional prize money that came to OC across the year, because it went from maybe 100K or 75K a season up to 300.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I guess that turns into two. So it went from 150, maybe 200, up to 300, 400, actually, because of the championships as well. So it doubled the prize money, which maybe made up for that, but the value of their contracts went down.
Yeah, for sure. Man, I'd love to boot camp. How sick would that be? I've spoken to a couple of people who've boot camped in Korea, and apparently that's been pretty sick.
I mean, realistically, right now, off-season started for Renegades, obviously 7 weeks earlier because you guys didn't make top two, and you guys could have been over in North America boot camping. That would have been the perfect time.
Mm.
And come back and be, you know, twice as strong.
Sure. Well, if you're listening to this, Josh, those are the words.
Yeah, do it.
Before we start to wrap up, there's just one topic that I'd like to quickly just have a quick chat about. Then me and Yumi, I can't remember which one's which, had a chat before jumping on, and that's this whole idea of looking at VOD reviews and scrims. Now, I think Yumi had the kind of mindset that a lot of teams don't scrim as much as they should. What is your opinion on that, Johnny?
Well, it's a weird one. So Rocket League, especially this season, has had players lacking motivation because of the lack of lands, which is understandable. I think that one of the main problems that players have had is a lack of structure in what they're doing. So when you're just at home all the time, you're doing school from home, and then you're also scrimming from home, and then you're also competing from home, and everything, just living at home. There's not as much structure in the life, and it's harder for young people. I mean, I can only imagine if I was trying to compete at age 15. Yeah, there's no shot that you're going to be able to scrim like as much as you should. So it's not entirely their fault, but at the same time, I do think that Rocket League players don't realize how lucky they are to have this opportunity and how much they're maybe blowing it in some cases, because Rocket League careers have been, on average, pretty short, and esports careers historically have been very short on average. So unless you're just expecting to be the next Garrett G who qualifies for every season, yeah, you've got to just look at what your peers are doing, think, okay, they did, like, this is what I think is happening. I think that from what I've heard of just pro players talking about hours and how many hours you need to play and how many hours they are playing, how many hours this team's playing, I think what they're doing is they're looking at what everybody else is doing and thinking, okay, cool, yeah, Mist has got 50 hours past 2 weeks, so I've got 50 as well, so I'm fine. They're thinking about it like this. It's more like, okay, what are other people doing? Yeah, okay. Yeah, Energy are grinding, but I don't think Envy are grinding. Yeah, we're probably all right. Yeah, we'll be fine. Let's just go in with, you know, 6 yards past two. Everybody's just kind of trying to do the minimum to get by, when instead they could be just putting in more work. Like, hey, this team, they're slacking. Let's double their hours. Let's like put in even more. And of course, that's going to yield more results if you can use that time effectively. But yeah, you do have to use it effectively. You can't just go play twos ranked for, you know, 12 hours a day and expect to become a better player. It's not going to work. Yeah, you have to. I think having a coach or having someone who can watch replays for you and tell you what is going wrong, what your team needs to work on, listen into the comms, hear when it's going wrong and what is happening in the comms. Like, having someone like that, a mediator, can make a big difference, and it can really help teams like efficiently improve. I don't know how teams actually do replay review these days, but I know it's probably really boring for young people to sit down and watch a replay. So, you know, maybe there's a better way to do it. Just have someone make little, I don't know, GIFs of like coaching GIFs or something. I don't know if this if it's actually a thing, but that, you know, you're talking about young teenagers here, young adults. So they don't have the attention span to sit through a whole replay review and actually like enjoy that, even if they are learning from it. They're probably not going to enjoy that. It's going to feel like work. It's going to feel like school. Nobody likes that. So maybe the solution is to put it into like a GIF format, just condense it and say, here's a GIF of, you know, this particular instance that went wrong. This happened 5 times this game. We got to stop that. That's a lot easier to digest. And, you know, having somebody could do that, I think that could be a real bonus for an org or for a team. Like I said, from what I've heard, most of it's just, okay, I've heard players say that after doing two scrims, they do replay reviews for 2 hours, where they'll just sit there and watch replays. I don't know. That sounds like might be one of the reasons players get demotivated, if that's what you're doing. It's just gonna be such a grind. It's not gonna work.
I think it is a huge issue because people are burning out, you know, and that's not just even Rona, but it's also, you know, the schedule is really intense early on, especially in RLCS X, where Sonics were like, oh, we want more series. And then we're like, you know what? All the series, all the grid, everything, have a million series. And then realized that they went a little overboard and tuned that back. So I think that is in a better spot at the end of RLCS X. But something I used to do with Alva Sydney, for your point, Johnny, is it wasn't GIFs. I'd actually make videos. So I'd make a Drip A specific video. And part of this was, you know, some of them were better at taking feedback than others. Like if I go to Torsos in that team, I'd say, Torsos, you're doing this wrong. I could do it in front of everybody. I could do it in the middle of a scrim or whatever. And he'd be like, yes, captain, my captain, I will fix that. And he was just very receptive to everything I said. Maybe Jake and Drip A had different personalities around that. But I would make a video and I would go over a set of scrims and I'd hone in on like one or two major mistakes that a person is making, gather a few clips, like reiterating multiple points of where that person made a certain mistake or had a certain habit that was causing them issues. I'd be like, hey, this is the issue you're having. Show them the clips, like, and I do this all in the video, and send them a video, have a set of clips and talk about it and be like, hey, this is how you can fix it. Come to me and we'll talk, you know? And I did that for each of them. And that was like one of the biggest things that really improved them. And obviously as a coach, that's a massive time saver for them to not have to look at an entire set of replays.
Yeah.
There is advantage to looking at a replay as a team so that I can get, I don't know, Drip A back in the day to come and give his input on what the other two are doing. They should still be able to feed off each other and learn off each other. But having that extra one, and especially having it external, out of the way where I'm not showing that one video for Drip A to everyone, was a major point for Drip A especially, because he at least came across defensive. He wasn't really defensive. He was listening, but he'd always have like that instant reaction of like, oh, I did this because of this. And it's like, nobody cares. And it sounds like you're not listening. But when you take him out of that, you know, there's that entire issue in the team goes away and he improves on what he was, and he was already improving on it, and it just fixes it without any drama.
That sounds great.
And in terms of, I think Johnny hit it on the head with, you know, teams just not like trying to push that extra mile. But I want to see teams, and maybe now is not the right time for it, but this has always been the case. For most teams, it's 2 hours a night of scrims, and everyone's like, well, that's the norm. I'm going to do that. But I want to see the team that does 3-4 hours, and not 3-4 hours straight. But if you're a professional player and you're, you know, your entire job is this, you don't have school or anything like that, which there are teams that have entire players without any of them going to school, and you're not going, hey, why don't we have a set of scrims from 1 to 3 and then another one from 6 to 8 or whatever it is that you want to do. So you have a break in the middle of it, get a higher quality, you get some time to think about it, and you can update your play on the same day. I want to see that. I don't really get to see enough people put in more than 2 hours a night. And there are teams out there as well who are putting in, or players out there who are just putting in only 2 hours a night, 12 hours a week, just playing scrims and not any more practice out of that. And I would say 90% of those players end up falling behind. There are very few of those players who play well. And I think the greatest example of that is Chaucette. Chaucette always felt like he played well or better on less hours. But I think those, over a very long time, those lesser hours caught up with him. And it's taken him time to catch up now over the top of RLCS.
I just don't believe this whole like idea. I don't know who's, well, it's just such a, it's an idea that you want to be true as a pro player. You want it to be true so badly that you believe it. Like playing less makes you better. The only thing that I can think of that will actually be true in that context is taking like breaks. That can be good. And I'm sure everybody's had a time where they take a massive break from Rocket League. You come back and you're just like, wow, this feels fantastic. I feel great. I did this recently myself. I didn't play Rocket League for a while. I don't think I played like during championships week or since until maybe like 3 or 4 days ago. And the first day back, I was like, oh man, this is just so easy. Just ranking up, no problem after taking a big break. And, you know, somebody explained it to me is because you don't just forget the good habits. You also forget bad habits when you take a break. You forget all the habits. You can kind of like apply, you've maybe gained more knowledge about the game throughout all that time that you're learning, but you've been hindered by bad habits you've picked up that you don't even know you have. And then when you come back, you kind of relearn all of those habits a little bit. It's not like you have to relearn how to fast aerial or anything. It's just like the very minute things you don't even notice. And then you could just maybe feel more mechanical. You're like, why am I faster? It's well, actually, you were doing things inefficiently before. You didn't even know. And now that you've had that time to refresh your brain, take a break, come back, you're actually able to improve. So yeah, strategic breaks, definitely. Taking like lowering your hours, I mean, you've got to obviously prioritize healthy lifestyle and sleep and everything. That is obviously going to increase performance. But that there's doing that, and then there's scrimming for 2 hours every day and calling that professional Rocket League. That's not professional Rocket League. You know, you've got to put in more work than that. Whether it's just like throwing on a replay of a game that you want to just sit back and watch, okay, what went wrong here? Because I know players can do that. Some of them enjoy this. Not all will enjoy that, but some players do. And they can really learn from it, whether it's just like getting into twos, really just getting more time on the ball. That's the advantage of 2v2 ranks is you're on the ball a lot more. So it's why free play is so effective. You're always on the ball. So just mixing it up and doing a bit of free play, a bit of training packs, bit of twos, bit of replay review, bit of scrims, keeping it fresh. And like Emmy said, starting early in the day, because if your first scrim is at night, then you're probably doing something wrong. Unless, of course, you get school, then you're off the hook. But a lot of these teams are just full-time Rocket League and they don't start actually working until it's 6 p.m. or late in the day. And then you're wondering why these guys are staying up till 1 million o'clock and having the worst sleep schedule. Well, that'll probably be why. The day started at 6 p.m. and they've missed the part of the day where actually you're most fresh and your brain is most awake, which is from what I know, 3 hours after, like 3 to 4 hours after you wake up, that's like when you're in the prime time for learning.
Mm-hmm.
I can give a little extra context as well in terms of like players who think that they play better on less hours. Because I got to talk to Chaucette about it, he's like very specifically one of those players who felt like that. And I think a large part of it for him, and I'm paraphrasing, maybe it's not this, but is that he has difficulty switching his mindset between twos and threes. So if he plays, if he's playing a lot of twos, then moving to threes, then he's got a different way that he's playing the game and thinking about the game. So that was where I mostly got that he felt he was playing worse when he was playing more hours. Which only, in my opinion, reinforces the fact that you could have a team that scrims 4 hours a day. And if you're scrimming 4 hours, then that's 4 hours a day of an intense game like Rocket League and a mental game like Rocket League. That's probably enough to hammer both your mechanics and your play as a team and keep you in that threes mindset if you're that kind of player. If you're not, if that's not the reason, then yes, you should be hammering for twos. You should be hammering free play. You should be getting your exercise and your sleep, of course.
I wonder if there's anything to the idea of, well, there's two different philosophies I've heard for training from athletes, and one of them is they'll train way more. Like, well, that's the, you know, where the idea of training weights comes in. If you're running, why not go, if you're gonna, like, I don't know, do a 5k race, then just train with weights, then you take them off for the race and you're faster, right? So you're training harder than you'll ever have to you're ever gonna have to compete, which is sort of what the two scrims back to back would be, because you're playing two, I mean, you could probably squeeze in seven games in an hour pretty easily. So you're doing two, it's just sets of seven back to back. Most teams just hop straight out of one lobby into the next one and they get started because they don't want to be late. So you're just doing 14 games, maybe 13, 14 games of scrims in a row. That's a lot. So yeah, you're way more than a best of five, which is what people usually compete with. So, you know, there's that aspect to it. If you could do that, if you could do 14 games, then obviously you could do five. And you could definitely do the RLCSX format, which a lot of teams and coaches were complaining about, which didn't make sense to me. I don't know why people are complaining. It's totally fine. But anyway, the other thing that I'm interested in, and I'm not really sure if any teams do this, is trying to like schedule their scrims with hour gaps between them to try and simulate a tournament more. Because that's what usually happens. You have one series, then a break, then you have another series, then a break. And sometimes you have back-to-back series, but you have, you know, both that you have to be ready for. But there's usually at least a 15-minute break. You never hop from one lobby right into the next one when you're competing. So that might be, I mean, that would obviously take up more time. And I know that that would probably be an off-putting thing for players. So like, what? Our scrim block is now 2 hours and 15 minutes because there's a break. I want, what happened to the 2 hour scrim block? I don't want to scrim for 2 hours, 15 minutes. I want to scrim for 2 hours. What happened to my 15 minutes? But it's more like a real tournament. Yep. So do you think there's any benefit to that?
We did a bit of that in Berlin in the boot camp for Reciprocity on the way to Madrid. And I scheduled 3 to 4 scrims a day. We had breaks between them, and I would have like loud noises playing in the apartment behind them and stuff like that, and like really like annoying stuff around it, so they had to focus on and just like be in that environment. And then we got to Worlds and we came 7th/8th. So
the anecdotal evidence proves that this is a terrible idea.
Yeah, never do that. Just do scrims back to back.
Oh, that's funny.
I will jump in there. I've had the complete polar opposite, I guess. As an exercise scientist, I've, you know, previously when I was in working with StarCraft predominantly with a lot of those lads, you know, you see it in the same thing as traditional sports, this idea of periodization of training, right? And being able to implement specific structured schedules that are strategic, you know, whether that be back to back to back, whether that be with X, Y, and Z amount of break time, or whether that be with scrim, scrim, break, scrim, for example. And I recall back to when I was actually coaching a couple of StarCraft players, and you know, it was really an individualistic approach to really know what works best for them. I think that's important to really understand. You can't just throw someone in the deep end and say, hey, we're going to scrim 2 hours like this. It needs to be a gradual approach. And if you have that gradual approach, it allows for the adoption period to be so much more successful. But what I did with those guys is we would do, because StarCraft games go for such a short amount of time, we would do 2 games, then we'd have a break, and then the guys would actually review on those 2 games, what they did, what wrong, what they did right, and they'd use that feedback purely on what they did wrong to go into the third game. And most often than not, that third game would have so much better results. So it was this really interesting bias where you can, I guess, do 2 scrims, have a look at the 2 scrims, what went wrong, what went right, and then really take those results and lead them into the next couple of scrims. And I think that's probably the way that I'm thinking about going about it with the RNG boys. A little bit of a leak there, but you know, it works. It's awesome.
I'm like very, you know, unaware of how all these things go on. The last time I coached Rocket League was a long time ago, and I was like coaching bronze players like Yummy on how to half flip. So it was a different coaching game for me, but this is all very interesting stuff. I've always get asked, like, do you ever want to be a Rocket League coach? And genuinely, I think for me, the answer is probably no, because I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard. I was manager for Flipside for a while, and it's still stressful. It is unbelievable. There's so much stress just being attached to being a coach or a manager or any kind of involvement with an org or a team, because you're just there and you can't do anything. Once it gets to the game day, it's just on them and there's nothing you can do. And it's just, yeah, the stress is crazy. So that's the one thing I have a lot of respect for people who can coach for so long, because that must be really hard. Obviously, there's high highs, but there's also low lows. And you're just like watching. Mm. So my biggest stressful moment when I was managing Flipside was watching them try to qualify for season 3. They went into the match against Resonant at the time, which is Mognus a lot meta before they were Method. And yeah, going into that series, Flipside had a way better league record, but somehow they're in a game 7. They're losing by a goal and they needed to equalize on 0 seconds or really late in the game just to get into an overtime that they then won. So I mean, that was so stressful. I literally couldn't watch. I was like, what's the point? I can't even watch. I want to watch, but I can't. So man, don't want to do this. Yeah. Don't want to do this anymore. It's too hard.
Yeah, I hated watching RLCS on 10 seconds delay and hearing the boys, like, you'd hear Fruity make a moan or a grunt and you're like, no, is that a goal? Wait, they're still coming. It's fine. Like,
that's exactly, yeah.
You're just not quite sure what's about to happen. And I never wanted to be like, hey, you know, stream the match to me on Discord, because I didn't want to have a chance of them having a lower PC performance or anything like that. So it was super, super, super stressful. And then you hear the yes, and I'm like, hopefully that's a goal. Yeah, it is. They're not talking.
And then you've also got to worry about that. If you're in OCE coaching, then a yes could be an own goal. Like, they might just be celebrating for the memes about an own goal. So you have to wait even for that. You'd be like, are they trolling? Please don't let them be trolling. It better be a goal. Yes, it's a goal. Okay. It's a hard life.
Yeah, I can resonate that with the infamous cringe. Yep. I remember just hearing Fever scream, yes. And I was thinking, was it a goal? Surely it's a goal. And just hearing like the relief. You know, I was pacing during that match, but you know, I guess they're the moments we live for, right?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting, but stress is very stressful. So casting's a lot less stressful. It's a bit easier in that aspect, which is nice. You don't have to worry too much about that. As long as you don't, I mean, some casters worry about the production side of things. And when a show is going wrong, or when the tournament just has something go wrong. Like, I remember when the Cypical thing disconnect happened, and then there's a massive like admin issues and everybody's throwing shade around and there's all these questions. But you know, some people get really worried about that when things go wrong in the TO side. The casters just get really stressed out. But as long as you can separate yourself from all that, it's really not that stressful a job. The only thing that is stressful is when, in this online world, when you're having technical issues and you don't know what it is. It's always like, why is like, Jarvi had a mic clipping issue in the RLCS Championships week? And I felt so bad for him because, I mean, what is it? Why is his mic clipping? What is going on? It's just making a ticking noise. So he can't cast because it's making a noise. And that's really frustrating. So yeah, apart from that, we tend to avoid those high stress situations. At least I do. Maybe Yami disagrees, but yeah, as long as you don't have sound issues.
I mean, I had them when I was at Throwdown because I was doing, like, I was the guy.
You're doing production as well. You're pushing the buttons.
I helped design broadcasts, so the production I was in charge of, and somewhat. We had a head producer, so he took over the role, but if he made mistakes, which inevitably happens on any productions, that were forward-facing, I would get annoyed. And then also I was head of operations too, so like I hired out the admin and stuff like that, so I had to do that. I was the one who wrote all the rules.
Well, obviously
all that
most casters don't have to do all that, but that's hard when you're the tournament organizer as well. That's definitely a lot more to juggle.
And I still have that because I run my own tournaments in OCE and stuff. And at that time, I don't even have the chance to hire an admin because it's like, oh, I help out. Or actually, I'm really busy right now. So I'm like admining in the middle of the match and casting and trying to do the broadcast and stuff like that.
You ever
that.
Had to admin a different game on someone else's stream while you're streaming a game from the same tournament?
I haven't had to do that.
It's just like, one of the players just left the lobby on Corelli's stream because he's streaming this like a different game from the qualifier for the tournament I'm running. I'm like, what is going on? Hold on a second, guys. Let me go check it out. Oh, yeah, right enough. Somebody's left. Well, I guess we're going to have to DQ him then. So send the admin. Yeah, you can DQ him. And then, okay, anyway, back to the game. Here we go. I think that transparency is kind of content in and of itself, though. So people kind of like that when you're just very open with what's happening. It's a different kind of vibe to the very serious tournaments, of which there are many. Like the scuff production can go a long way. It can be the most recent fun one I had with that was the one I did with Turbo, Rizzo, and Dazarin, where we're casting Guild against the NA Super Team. And I didn't make any plans after that match. That's the only thing we planned, was one best of seven between Guild and the NA Super Team. But I didn't make any plans after because I had a feeling there's probably going to be more call-outs after this. And sure enough, there were Queso against the NA Super Team and then Envy against the EU Super Team. That was the most scuffed production ever, but it was great. I mean, I think it was the perfect vibe for that rivalry. Because you can't take it too seriously when it's online, I don't think. You can't act like you're... A lot of these little tournaments do. They cast it like it's an RLCS final. I respect the grind. They want to put that work in to improve that craft. But I don't think it is the appropriate way to, do the really small tournaments. I think you got to just have some fun with those. And I try and have fun with the smaller tournaments I do.
It's hard because I feel like at that level as a caster, you're trying to prove that you are worthy of RLCS. And so you try and cast those tournaments like RLCS. I hate like being involved in those casts. Like if I'm like asked to cast something, I'm always happy to do it. I'll be with a partner. If they're taking things too seriously in a weekly or a community level tournament and like casting it like it is the RLCS finals, I just do not have anywhere near as much fun as if I'm having a joke and they're laughing along with it and we're having a good time. Yeah. And I can kind of understand it. Like I understand the grind and the mentality of wanting to prove that you are the best, but part of that is also being able to prove that you can
have
fun.
It's entertainment. So you gotta be entertaining as well. And I don't think this is entertaining to take it way too seriously.
Plus nowadays we don't take RLCS too seriously. We never have in OCE. at least, yeah. I mean, I've been casting OCE pretty much the entire time, and we've always had a good laugh and a good joke throughout the entire time. Like,
yeah,
it's not unless it's like a serious moment or a really serious match, you have some fun.
Yeah, you gotta adapt.
Adapt and overcome, hey. Well, I guess this is pretty much turned into a full-length feature film, which I can't believe. Love it. Absolutely. I'm absolutely blessed to be able to chat.
What you can do is take the questions, right?
Yep.
and then cut it up so you have an interview with Johnny and an interview with me over two different episodes.
Oh, is that a big brain?
And I'll just be randomly referring to Johnny, and sometimes Johnny will say my name, and it'll be interesting.
That is a big brain strat. I didn't think of that. I guess we'll end it there. You know, it's absolutely been an absolute pleasure chatting to you today, Yami and Johnny, really exploring, you know, the depth of Rocket League shoutcasting, but then also talking and exploring more so on the side of emotion regulation and dealing with mindset in Rocket League as well. And I think by having this conversation, a lot of upcoming players, a lot of youth players, even parents will most likely be tuning in and really taking away little bits of information that can be absorbed and put into their own gameplay as well. So I guess just on a final note, if you had any advice for any players listening who are really just looking to become a better player themselves, what would you give them?
I want to go back to where we were before. Find two players that you have the same mindset, that you click with in the same way, have a very similar attitude and culture, and just try and improve with them, and they'll help you improve at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like with what I said earlier with casting and content creation. For me, it has to be fun because it's not a viable career choice for mm-hmm. everyone. You might not just be good enough. It's hard to know because obviously with sports, pretty obvious early on in life who's going to be good at sports because if it's also physical, oh, this guy's extremely tall yep. and extremely fast and extremely strong. He's probably going to be good at sports. You don't really know that with video games. So you got to like take it a bit more, you know, just slowly to see. Are you actually any good? But if you're not, at least you're having fun, then you had fun. If you just, you know, put a ton of time into it, hated every minute of it, and you're still not good enough to go pro, mm-hmm. that would really suck. So yeah, never sacrifice everything. Don't sacrifice school, don't sacrifice jobs, don't sacrifice relationships for things like streaming, mm-hmm. Content, casting, gaming, because it might not work. You never know what it's going to work. Just focus on making it a hobby first, and then if it's going really well, it should be pretty obvious if you're good enough to go pro. Like if Rocket League's like a hobby and you're really killing it, then yeah, just find, yeah, like Yami said, just try and find people who are in the same page as you, who want to do the same things and have the same goals. Can't go wrong.
Fantastic. Two absolutely fantastic tips that I'm sure a lot of players are going to listen to and take on board. I guess as a final note for everyone listening, where can we find you on all your socials, just to stay up to date with, you know, the content you guys are posting as well?
Twitter, Twitch, everything /YUMI_cheeseman, and you'll find me.
And I'm Johnny cool. Boy _I on everything, as far as I know. I think it's everything. Not sure. YouTube's got a weird like URL, but I think you'll probably still find me if you search Johnny Boy _I, so. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
No worries, no stress. And we'll make sure to put all those links in the show notes down below. It's been absolutely a pleasure chatting to you today, Yami and Johnny, and I really appreciate both your time.
No, thank you, man. Pleasure.
Thank you very much, and enjoy both of you the rest of your day.